Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future. They're providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to talk with attorney Jacqueline Dodd. She's an advocate for children, and she has a lot of good stuff she's going to share with us about protecting kids and stuff like that. And I'm really excited. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thank you very much, Sherry.
Why don't you tell a little bit about yourself, what you do, and then we'll get into the chatting.
Okay. I am an attorney, and I practice juvenile law, special education law, and family law. So a lot of what I do is aimed at juveniles, protecting children and their futures, making sure that children who have special needs in the education system get the education they should be getting and the education they deserve. So I feel very strongly about children, about representing children and helping them get past any kind of struggles they have or any issues within our different systems.
Absolutely. It must be so complicated and hard sometimes emotionally to do that because there's so much wrangling in the world, especially when it comes to children.
There can be, yes. It's a very special education law because you deal with, I represent parents of children with special needs. So I help those parents get the right IEP from school or the right programs from the education system that they are not receiving. It can be very emotionally draining, and it's very hard to keep myself separated from it personally because the best way I can advocate for children is to look at it all from a neutral standpoint and try to see it from both the perspective of the school as well as the parents. But I can empathize very easily with my parents because I have a child with special needs as well. And then dealing with children in family law and in the juvenile system is very similar because it can be emotionally draining, and it's a very heightened sensitivity for parents. In juvenile law, it is where children are charged with an offense, and you can be charged in the state of Texas from 10 years old anywhere through your 19th birthday or beyond. So it is it's a very emotional time when I come in to help families and their children, and they're very much in a sense of panic. So I try very much to have an open ear, to listen very carefully, but also to make sure they get the proper representation they need. I have to make sure my children understand what I'm talking about, so I have to talk to them on their level and make sure they fully understand what's happening because it's happening to them. It's not just about them.
That sounds so hard. It's a weird question, but I watch a lot of TV. And one of the things that I learned from, like, spy shows is that spies compartmentalize. Do lawyers do that? I mean, do you, like, this is for home, and this is for work, and this is for the court? I mean, is that how you deal with it?
I think in a sense we do, yes, because when it comes to my child, I can get very emotionally and I can't see the forest through the trees. But when it comes to anyone else's child, I kind of turn on and put that lawyer head on and can kind of look at it from that point of view. When I look at situations where children have been abused, because I've represented children in CPS cases, also in some of my juvenile cases, they can be very serious cases where there's could be a victim of a sexual type of offense or a victim of a very violent crime. I have to really just focus on what that child needs, how to explain things to that child, and not bring all that home to my family. That was very hard when I first started practicing law back in 2001 to not bring everything home. I would bring it home. I would get upset. I would cry. And now it's kind of turned into where I can separate it. I can see the separation, and I know what my role is. And I know the best way to be most effective for any of my children I represent is to be that neutral voice that I can explain things in a very logical and neutral way to the families.
When you're working with families, is it, how involved are the children? I mean, is it just the moms and the dads, or are you involved with the kids when you're doing this, whichever kind of case?
I am, depending on the area of law it is. So in the special education area, I do not work as much with the children as I do with their parents. Because it's basically when the child is not receiving the type of education they should be receiving, I can go in and I can attend ARD meetings with the parents. I can attend mediation. Sometimes we have to mediate cases. Sometimes I have to file a lawsuit against the district, and so that might go to trial. There, I do not get as involved with the kids. I like to, at some point in it, either meet the child or see a picture, because then I know who I'm fighting for. But that is much more involved with the parents. When I represent CPS kids, then I do go in, I meet with the children, usually monthly. I talk with the kids about what they want. I present what they want in court, but the children never appear in court. When I represent in my family law cases, the cases I truly love in family law have to do with the children and child custody issues, and there I'm dealing more with each parent and not communicating as much with the child. In the juvenile area of law, I communicate very much with the child because the child is my client. So even if their parent retained me, my duty is to that child, whether the child is 10 or the child is 16. So I usually explain everything to the family, but then there are many conversations that occur with that child without parents present to maintain an attorney-client privilege. And that child and I, we end up, really, they make the decision as to what they want to do with their case with my guidance, usually guidance from their parents, but they are very much involved in that type of system. Because they are the ones going to court. They are the ones who will either be placed on probation or sent to some type of placement facility, and they have to understand what they did was wrong, or if we end up going to trial on the case and we have to contest it, they have to be the one to help me defend them. So they are very much involved in that. The others, the kids, are not as much involved.
Because you were saying in a juvenile case that a 10-year-old, how mature can a 10-year-old be?
In my opinion, not very mature, but the laws of the state of Texas have said that any child the age of 10, starting at 10, you are held responsible for your actions. So starting at 10 years old, they can actually be charged criminally for any crime that is under the penal code that an adult can be charged with. And they can, now they are not, they do not have the same range of punishment or anything as an adult. It's a very small, separated type of specialty area. Juvenile law, you are tried under the same crimes as adults are, but it's all based under the family code. So there is a huge separation from adults to juveniles for a reason. Juveniles have much more protections. One example is, as a child's attorney, I can actually, they might tell me I want to testify at my trial. I am the only one who can stop them. I don't have to have their permission. They can say, no, I still want to testify, and I can tell them they're not going to. And I basically trump anything they have to do at that point with testifying in court. So it's difficult because I don't think they're mature. I don't think they have fully developed brains, but they can be held accountable for their offenses and their actions at that point.
Because I can see a teenager, that's different, but a 10-year-old, to me, a 10-year-old is a baby. I mean, I just, you know,
Agree with you, and I've represented many 10-year-olds that sit in a chair and their feet don't touch the floor, and it's hard to swallow, and it's hard to understand. Now, the one thing about the juvenile system is their goal is rehabilitation. They are aimed fully at rehabilitation and not as much on punishment. Now, punishment comes with it because in a child's eyes, if you're being placed on probation, you're essentially removing their entire social life, and that is punishment. But the goal is to get the child the help they need so that they do not repeat that behavior. And the juvenile system allows you that opportunity to make that mistake by later, depending on the types of cases, these kids can go back in and seal their record. and basically so that nobody can find the record, nobody can steal it, and they can actually say they were never, they never had any type of offense, they were never adjudicated or detained on any type of case.
Okay, that makes sense. I just, I don't know, I'm picturing the 10-year-olds I've known, and
I look at my son, who's 9, and I go, oh, my gosh, in 1 year you can be charged. And it just, it scares me. And I look at all the kids in his class and know all the 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds, they're tiny. They're babies still. Yeah. And it's very hard to swallow because kids are very impulsive. They do, they think they're invincible, and they just do things.
I mean, you... take chewing gum, you know, I mean, that's considered a crime, that's considered shoplifting, but you're 9, you know, you don't really, or 10, you don't really understand that actually is a crime. You're still a baby.
Right.
You know what I mean? I just
I
think it's kind of strange.
No, I completely agree with you, and there are cases where the kids have been so young, and they'll go, well, I didn't know. Well, I know you didn't know, but the law doesn't say if you don't know, that's okay. So it has to, it's a very eye-opening, scary thing these days. What I can say is what I've seen over the years is when you look at what I did as kids, some of the things kids are now being charged with are things I may have done or some of my buddies may have done as a kid. So then you think, okay, is that was just funny at one time, you know, 20 years ago, and now it's an offense. So does that mean as time goes on, in another 10 to 20 years, are the things kids are doing now that they're getting away from it, are we going to continue to keep getting stricter and stricter where kids can't really do anything and can't be a child without this huge repercussion?
That's just scary. That's just damn scary. Mm-hmm. Really.
It's very scary. And that's part of why I try to get into.
Right? It's not law everywhere that a 10-year-old is considered able to be tried, right? It's just in Texas.
That's just in the state of Texas, yes. So Texas has law specific to them. Each state has their own separate law. So in the state of Texas, a juvenile is considered someone from the age of 10 through 16. At 17, you're charged in the adult system, but the juvenile system can possibly hold you beyond your 17th, 18th, 19th birthday, depending on the type of offense.
Wow. Just so we can have a round discussion, I want to, that's kind of like shocking to me, so I thought I'd just change that up a little bit.
Okay.
You also help children that are special needs. What exactly, how do you help them? I mean, I know you have a child with special needs, but how do you help them? What exactly do you, how do you advocate for them? What do you do?
So that is any child with special needs in the school system could be eligible to receive special education services. And in receiving those services, a lot of children in Texas will have, really it's around the country, but they call it different things. It's the IDEA, which is a federal law that regulates special education in the school system. So any child with certain types of special needs can become eligible to receive these services, and then you will have an individualized plan at school for you. So if a parent needs help understanding what their child's rights are in the special education system, if they need help developing the IEP, if, let's say, a parent attends a meeting, it's called an ARD meeting, and they don't like what happened and the school doesn't agree with what the parent wants, then the parent at that point might want to come find me, and I can help them try to go into that situation and get them what they want. A lot of times if you see a long period of time where there's been a deprivation where the child has not been getting what they need, there's been a lot of regression in their program or in their skills, that's where we can look at going in, and basically you file a lawsuit against the district, and that's where you request a due process hearing with a neutral hearing officer that's regulated by TEA.
Okay. Now, for
in a nutshell,
the law, can you say that some of those things in a way that we know what you mean? Because I have no idea what, like, TA and stuff like that means.
Right. So, okay. So the best way to say it, the best way for me to explain it is children who have special needs, they have rights. To a certain type of education, and they have the right to have certain things implemented in their educational plan. And if they do not do that, then I can step in and help them get the education they should be getting, the education they deserve to be getting, so that they will progress steadily the way they should be progressing to be able to graduate at some point. Now, students with special needs do have the opportunity in the state of Texas to stay in the educational system until their 21st birthday. So they can stay longer to complete what they need to complete and to help them transition better and get a better basis for their education.
Okay, that makes that I understood.
Does that make
better.
More sense? Okay.
It's just, I know it's something that, because you're an attorney and you talk in court and stuff like that, you and judges and other attorneys understand, but my audience aren't part of that world, so I just want to make it clear
right.
So people understand what you mean.
Yeah, no, and it's hard because I speak it every day, so I understand it, but it can be a very convoluted process because very few people practice true special education law because it is such a fine, it's similar to juvenile, is a fine little niche. And you find a lot of the two systems where they start overlapping.
So, like, where you have, like, a child that had some kind of trouble who's also a special needs child, then you'd have, like, sort of, like, a dual purpose that you'd be helping them with.
Yes, because you have a lot of children with special needs who can get in trouble in the criminal system. Because the criminal system doesn't say, well, if you have special needs, then you can't be charged in the system. You can still be charged in the system. So a lot of times then you're looking at a child with special needs who has ended up in the criminal system and they don't need to be in that criminal/juvenile system. So then you've got to kind of help them navigate through both systems. And certainly from my experience, the two systems do not work well together.
I think that's just all over the world. And that government is so compartmentalized, whatever level of government, that they never work well. They don't play well with each other. They just don't.
They don't.
And,
uh-huh.
And that's everywhere. I mean, I don't think that's just in the U.S. I think that's because I've heard too much stuff from my friends in other countries that pretty much it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They don't work well with each other.
I would agree. I definitely agree with you. A lot of people will go, well, it's black and white, but there is so much gray in there. You can't do that. It's a very difficult to when they start meshing and getting together. I agree with you very much.
When you're doing, you have your own personal life though. You have your family, you have your own stuff. You have to have some kind of relaxation. What do you do?
I spend a lot of time with my son. I enjoy him, and I will go to a lot of the local football, the high school football games here. We spend a lot of time outside, walking, riding bikes. He would do anything that is outside.
Aww.
I enjoy a lot of traveling with family, taking him places, going to see my family or going on trips with my family. So I try to, when I take my downtime, I try to be completely away from work and just relax. I am a single mom, so it's him and I a lot of the time. But we try to do things that are fun and together, and he kind of sees the world in a different way. So he really brings to earth, for me, he really helps me appreciate the little things in the world because he sees things different than I think most kids. We'll walk outside when we're going to get ready to ride a bike, and he'll see that some flowers in our garden have just bloomed. And he'll go, Mommy, look, the flowers, the colors, they're so pretty. When, in the hustle and bustle of our lives, I may never have noticed that, Or I may have seen, oh, they look nice today, but never have noticed the new blooms that some new flowers had. So he really brings me back to earth.
That's really beautiful. Is he creative?
Mm-hmm.
Is he a creative boy?
He's creative. He has Down syndrome. He has a very creative mind. He's very good at pretending, playing, like doing pretend play a lot. He really will think outside the box. He is delayed from his typical peers, as any child or a lot of children with Down syndrome are, but he's a very vivacious child, very energetic. So he keeps me on my toes, that's for sure, and he's a lot of fun. He can be very funny. He has a great sense of humor.
That's adorable. Do you by yourself watch movies? Do you read? Do you have other things that you do?
I do. I watch when it's just me by myself. I like to I hang out a lot with some of my girlfriends, and we enjoy going out to dinner and hanging out. I'll watch some movies. I've been watching more lately than I used to. But a lot of the movies I want to see are ones I want to take him to, too. So I do a lot of watching TV. Like when my mom comes in town, we'll find a lot of those funny shows on Netflix and just watch some random movies on Netflix and stuff. So that's a lot of fun.
You like pre-watch the movies?
For him?
To make sure that they're okay for him?
Usually, the only movies he's still really interest in right now are still cartoons. So as long as they were Disney or some type of G-rated then or PG, he's okay usually to watch them. He has gotten into very few movies that aren't cartoons right now. So he's still kind of into those, which most of them are okay. But at some point, I'm probably going to have to start watching them before him and seeing.
Because that's I don't have any children, but that's what some of my friends who have kids, they do. Because they want to watch stuff that's much more mature than they are, because they're cool.
Yes.
You know, even the some of the big comic book movies that are out, one of my girlfriends, she has I think he's 12. She'll pre-watch it because she just doesn't want him to watch some certain stuff. She goes, he's not ready for it yet.
I agree with you on that. I haven't done it yet because we're still kind of into the cartoons, but I see where I would have to do it. It's coming, I'm sure. He's also not overly interested in movies or TV. Like, to get him through a movie at the theater, he's usually good for about an hour and 15 minutes, and then we have a hard time sitting. So far he hasn't been overly interested. It's kind of similar to he's not really that interested in video games yet, and I'm buying my time with that and really glad, because at some point we're going to get consumed in video games. And I know that, and I don't like that. So.
Video games. I don't like how video games take over for reading. That's the only thing. I don't care if a kid likes video games, but it's like when you talk to a young adult who's been playing video games since they were young, it's like at a certain point there's a divergence, and they, instead of reading a good book, they will play a video game, and by the time they're young adults, they don't want to read. The video games is everything to them. So... because I've talked to some of my friends, and they said they don't want that for their kids. They want both. They don't mind the video games, but they want them to do both.
I agree, and I will sit out specific time with mine for go get a book and read. It's time for reading. So you can do your reading cards, you can do your sight word cards, or we can get a book, and we can just sit and read together. So we'll do that a lot. He likes to make up stories and kind of tell a story but make it up. So we'll make up stories together. Yeah, he enjoys that a lot. I'll tell me who's in the story and tell me what they're doing. So I ask all the questions, but he's basically creating the story.
I love that. That's great.
Fun.
Maybe he'll help you an author. You never know.
That's true. That would be awesome.
Or maybe he'll be a playwright.
Oh, that would be fun, too, yes.
Because he sees things differently, you know?
He does. He sees things very differently. I would love to have one day to see the world through his eyes because I get little glimpses of it. But I would just love to be able to be him for one day and see what he sees and hear what he hears because I think it would be very different than what the norm is. And I think it's, I don't know, who's to say it's not a better way of thinking and seeing things.
We have a caller. Hold on just a second. Hi, caller.
Hello?
Hi. Where are you calling from and your name, please?
Oh, hi. So I'm Russell Vogel. I'm calling from East Northport, New York. So I actually just graduated with my master's in neuroscience, and I myself have ADHD. I, for the longest time, think of being a psychologist, and I'm really starting to think as to what I want to do. I love working with kids with special needs, worked with them for years at camp for kids with special needs I worked at. I'm really thinking of applying to law school and becoming a special education lawyer. And you said how you work with kids developing IEPs, and I was wondering, do you ever have any cases where you have a kid that maybe is a college age that maybe has like ADHD or any kind of learning disability that didn't really have an IEP while they were like in high school, and then once they get to college, you know, they're kind of floundering and struggling, and then they need that kind of representation, you know, when they get to the college to get accommodations?
So a lot of children who, or a lot of kids who graduate from high school, if they have an IEP or in Texas, what we call a 504 plan, where they're getting some type of accommodations, a lot of the colleges will adopt those same accommodations and do that for them. If they've never had accommodations before, I would definitely say that you need to get paperwork or go back and see if your parents can find paperwork from when you were first diagnosed with ADHD, and then you can get an evaluation as an adult to say, to say what accommodations you would need in college.
I wasn't saying about that just because, like, I was just saying that I had those accommodations. I was fortunate enough to have those, myself. I'm thinking of going into this field, and I was wondering if there's any clients that you have that, you know, are maybe in college age that never really had services, but because I know that, like, I was fortunate enough that I had those services when I went through college and grad school, you know, for my master's. But there's a lot of people, you know, that once they get to college, maybe they have ADHD but never really got kind of like services when they were – or any kind of learning disability, didn't really get those kind of services, you know, when they were in high school or elementary school, middle school. And then once they get to college, they find themselves struggling, and then they tell themselves, oh, my God, I feel like that I really need help. What can they do then? Because if they didn't really have an IEP or 504 in, you know – public school or, you know, when they were in elementary
school.
Right.
Now, I have never had any clients like that, but I know there have been other people who have had more of college-age clients, and a lot of what they will do is get them to get an evaluation and then present that to the Department of Disability through the university to see if they can get accommodations that are recommended. And a lot of them are successful at getting that.
Oh, nice. And so you said that you represent a lot of cases for, like, you know, education in terms of getting education accommodations for kids with disabilities. And also you said you represent criminal cases, like, for kids with disabilities. What about kind of, like, discipline cases in a school district? Like, if a kid with, a conduct disorder or maybe ODD, you know, maybe has an outburst at school, and they're maybe on the verge of getting expelled or suspended.
Yes, I do a lot of those disciplinary hearings, whether it's a suspension hearing or an expulsion hearing. I do a lot of appeals of those types of hearings, and I've handled a lot of those as well.
And those could kind of go both ways and kind of tie in both of your, like, ends of career, like saying maybe, like, I've never had experience with this, but, like, maybe you could say, like, oh, if this kid's expelled, he needs kind of that enriched environment, you know, to kind of succeed at school. And if he's kind of just, you know, homeschooled or something like that, or in a different learning environment, then he might not do as well. I guess, can't you also use that as well in your argument of to why
yes.
they shouldn't.
Yes, very much so. The two will overlap very much, where if you have a child who's receiving special education services, and that can be anywhere from being diagnosed with Down syndrome or autism or a behavior disorder to having a simple learning disability or dyslexia, that if they were to get in trouble, then you can look at what they're receiving in their plan to try to see how you can make the two work together. But also then I have represented kids who don't have any special education services at school. And there you still need to look at the individual child as a whole and figure out what does that child need and what kind of environment. Like, are we going to throw them into the alternative school and basically throw them to the wolves? Is that going to be a huge problem? Is that going to create depression, anxiety, that type of thing? So that
yeah, exactly.
all of them kind of play in together, very much so. You are correct.
And do you ever, I know like in my district when I was growing up, they really started to kind of segue towards having integrated, you know, blended classrooms. And I guess do you have to like kind of also do that as well? I guess kind of like fight for whether or not a kid should be in those blended classes versus being in a individual, you know, like class exclusively for kids with special needs?
Yes, very much so. So the trend now is going more towards inclusion or being in classes with what you would call typical developing peers. So you want your children who with any disabilities in with other kids who don't have disabilities, with the norm. But a lot of times, depending on the school district, depending on where, depending on the state, they might want to say, nope, I want to take your child and pull them out and put them over here in this other classroom with all these other kids with the same disability because that's easier to teach. But
yeah.
you really, there's a huge argument right now. And yes, that's a big part of what I do. A big part of the special education is pushing those kids who are being pulled out or don't have the intellectual ability or don't have the behavior ability to be with the other kids, it's pushing them back with them and providing the support and the services they need in that classroom so they're not pulled to a separate environment. That is a huge part of what I have to do.
Yeah, and I feel like that I don't know like what age I guess that kind of, you know, branches off, I guess, because once you get to high school, it seems like there is that it goes back to being kind of separated. You know, there's like special at classes and people that are in high school until they're 21 versus people that are high school versus 18, like, you know, typically developing peers.
Right. In high school, it is very much separated. I think the older, my personal opinion is the older kids get, the harder it is for them to stay academically with their other peers. But at the same token, I think the education system needs to go, okay, but what else are they benefiting from being with those peers? And let's work on some of that. And a lot of schools are required to modify the work. If someone isn't at an intellectual capability of doing ninth grade work, you can modify it but still present it in that same classroom.
Exactly.
Thank you for calling in, but we're coming to the end of the show.
thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. We're coming to the end. I just want to thank you for taking the time. Do you have a website, an email address, anything that you would like to give people in case they want to get in touch with you?
Yes. My email address is Jackie, J-A-C-K-I-E, at doddlawtexas.com, and Dodd is D-O-D-D. My website will be up by Sunday. It's right now under construction, and that will be under www.doddlawtexas.com. And then I do have a Facebook page, a business Facebook page, that is under Dodd Law Offices, PLLC. And so anyone is
Great.
Welcome to go there or contact me if anyone has any type of questions or concerns. I also try to go out and travel and speak a lot to different groups to help educate people as to what juveniles' rights are to try to help. So I'm open to any of that as well.
That was my next question. Do you have any speaking engagements that you'd like people to know about?
I don't right now. I'm working on a few. Yeah, I don't have any right now. I'm working on a few that are coming up probably in September and October, November. But I post all of that will be posted through my Facebook page and any articles that are important. I post all of that through there. So if anyone is interested in this area, I would highly encourage them to go on, like my page, and then you'll get those regular updates when events come up.
Thank you, Jackie, for coming on my show. Like I said, thank you for taking time out. I know you're a busy lady.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.